An Osho Talk. The White Lotus. Talks on the Zen Master Bodhidharma. Number 5.
Question. I have heard that all Buddhas in the past, present and future preached the same Dharma, and countless of beings were saved from suffering. Is this not true? Answer. You have heard someone speak of dreams, and you yourself are actually dreaming. Whatever you figure with your dualistic mind never makes a true account of mind essence. Therefore, I call you a dreamer. Dream is one thing, and realization another. Do not mix them together. Wisdom in the dream is not the real wisdom. One who has true wisdom does not hold self-recognition. Buddhas in the past, present and future are in the realm beyond cognition. If you shut off your thinking faculty, blocking off the road of your mind, you will enter a different sphere. Until that time, whatever you think, whatever you say, whatever you do, is nothing but foolishness in dreamland. Question. What kind of wisdom should one use to cut off delusions? Answer. When you observe your delusions, you will know that they are baseless and not dependable. In this way, you can cut confusion and doubt. This is what I call wisdom. Question. What sort of delusions will be cleared by Zen? Answer. Any delusions of mediocrity, of a philosopher, of a kravaka, of a pratyeka Buddha, or of a bodhisattva. Question. What is the difference between a sage's most excellent life and the common people's everyday life? Answer. It is like gossamer. Some mistake it for vapor, but it is in fact a spider's silk that floats in the air. A mediocre person sees the sage's life and believes it to be the same as his own everyday life, whereas the enlightened man sees the holy path in the light of mediocrity. If you will observe in the sutras that all Buddhas preach for two groups, the mediocre and the wise. But in the eye of Zen, a sage's life is one of mediocrity, and the mediocre person's as the sage's. This one life has no form and is empty by nature. If you become attached to any form, you should reject it. If you see an ego, a soul, a birth or a death, reject them all. Question. Why and how should we reject them? Answer. If you have Zen, you should not see a thing. The most firmly established in the path appears the most remiss.
The path to reality is full of paradoxes. Hence the logical mind cannot comprehend it. Logic is incapable of understanding a paradox. Logic tries to dissolve all paradoxes, to make things straight, clear. But paradox is intrinsic to nature. Nature exists through contradictions. Contradictions are not really contradictions, but complementaries. The person who thinks about truth is bound to think wrongly. All thinking is wrong about truth. Because the moment you start thinking, you follow the path of logic. And reality is paradoxical. They never crisscross. They run parallel, but they never meet. Another name for this paradoxicality of existence is mystery. Mystery is not a riddle. Mystery is not a problem, because it cannot be solved. There is simply no way to solve it. It is to be lived, experienced. Yet, you will not be able to answer what it is. Because the moment you try to answer it, you have to bring language in. And language is logical. Language is created by the logical mind. Hence, language is an inadequate, absolutely inadequate to express truth. Truth can be expressed only through silence. But then, silence again is a mystery. The first paradox that you will come on the path is the mind cannot ask a right question. It is not within its powers to ask the right question. Because to ask the right question is to find the answer immediately. In fact, the right question is the answer. In the world of the mind, there is a duality. The question and the answer, they are separate. In the world of reality, the right question is the answer. If you can ask the right question, there is no need to ask even. The very understanding of the right question is enough to understand the answer. But the right question cannot be asked by the mind. It can be asked only by the no mind, but the no mind never asks anything. This is the first paradox one comes across. The mind asks questions, but all questions raised by the mind are bound to be wrong. Because mind itself is wrong. Anything that arises out of that state is going to be wrong. And a wrong question cannot lead you to the right answer. The mind can ask millions of questions, but there is no answer anywhere for those questions. The no mind knows the answer, but the no mind never asks the question. It is so at ease, so at home with reality, that the question does not arise. Non-arising of the question is the answer. So the whole effort of Bodhidharma is to change the gestalt of your being, your focus. You are focused on the dualistic mind. The dualistic mind thinks always in either or. Either God is light or God is darkness. How God can be both? It becomes impossible for the mind to conceive that God is both simultaneously light and darkness, life and death. That God is and is not, and He is both together simultaneously. The mind starts feeling crazy if you force the mind to think upon such matters. The mind simply recoils back. It says, this is nonsense. One of the very keenest minds of modern West is Arthur Koestler. He came to study Zen. Now Zen cannot be studied in the first place. It is not a question of studying. You cannot approach it through the mind, through the intellect. But that is the only approach available to the contemporary man. Contemporary man is far poorer than man has ever been before. Rich in things, but poor in understanding. Arthur Koestler came to India, to Japan, traveled in search of what Zen is, studying scriptures, questioning masters, collecting notes of their answers, and then he wrote a book against Zen. I can understand why he wrote against. Because he felt the whole thing is nonsense. The whole thing appeared to him so illogical. I cannot condemn him. He represents the modern mind. He represents intellect. If you approach through the intellect, then Zen is illogical. But so is life. So is this whole existence. Here day and night are one. Here summer and winter are one. Here life and death are one. Koestler should think a little bit more about life too. Life is more like Zen than like anything else. Zen may be illogical. Because life is illogical. Logic is a man-made phenomenon. Logic is a frame imposed by us on existence. We try to sort things out, and existence is a beautiful chaos. We want to figure things out, what is what. And in existence, everything is turning and changing into everything else. The mud becomes the lotus. And one day, lotus falls back into the mud again. The mud becomes the body of a human being, a beautiful body, and one day it goes back to the earth. The earth rises into a tree, becomes green, red roses flower, great fragrance is released, and one day all disappears like a dream. Again the earth is back. Existence has no trouble with contradictions. It is the Aristotelian logic that is creating trouble for us. The first paradox is that the mind that can ask the question is not capable of understanding the answer. And the mind, our no mind, our Buddha mind, that is capable of asking the right question, need not ask it. Before you ask, the answer is there. Let us say it in another words. The head has only questions and the heart has only answers. Unless you reach to that depth of the heart, you will not have any real answers. Yes, answers you will have, because mind is very clever in supplying false answers. It raises false questions, it supplies false answers. That's what philosophy is all about. That is what doing philosophy means. Each false question is followed by many false answers. You can choose any, but they are all false. They are false because they are just guesswork. Reality has to be encountered, embraced, tasted. One has to be not separate from it to know it. One has to dissolve oneself into it to know it. The first question, I have heard that all Buddhas in the past, present and future, preached the same dharma and countless beings were saved from suffering. Is it not true? The question starts from, I have heard. And from the very beginning, it is wrong. Because it is not your question even. The question is also borrowed. It is based on other people's experience. It is just an opinion that you have gathered from somewhere. And now you are making a question out of it. It has no roots in you. It is like a plastic flower you have purchased from the market. It will not have any fragrance. It is not alive. The real question cannot arise out of others' opinions. You have to be in a meditative mood to find the real question. You have to learn how to commune with existence. The question starts, I have heard. It goes wrong from the very beginning. That all Buddhas in the past, present and future. Now, for a Buddha, there is no past, no present, no future. The Buddha exists only in the eternal. That's why he is called the Buddha. That he has transcended time. To be in time is to be asleep. Time is our sleep. Time is our mind. Time is our dreaming. To go beyond dreaming, thinking, mind, means to go beyond time. Time does not consist of present, remember. It consists only of past and future. Have you ever encountered the present? The moment you say, yes, this is the present, it is no more the present. It is already the past. The moment you recognize through the mind that this is the present, it has already slipped by. Mind cannot grasp it. It is so fast. The moment mind becomes aware, the bird has already flown out of the cage. The mind can think of the past because it is a dead phenomenon. The mind can accumulate dead things very easily. It is an antique collector. Or the mind can think of the future. The past is no more, the future not yet. In one sense, they both are same, because both are non-existential. And mind is clever with the non-existential. It can go on into the future, because it can dream, project, imagine. And there is no hindrance. But as the question arises of the present, mind is absolutely important. Because the present is so alive, and mind is clever only with the dead. And the present is present, and mind is clever only in dreaming, desiring, projecting, imagining. You cannot dream in the present. You cannot desire in the present. If you desire, it is in the future. Desire brings the tomorrow in. Jesus says to his disciples, look at the lilies in the field, how beautiful they are. And what is the secret of their beauty? Why they are so beautiful? More beautiful, Jesus says, than Solomon was ever in all his grandeur. The poor lilies are far more beautiful than great Solomon. Why? For the simple reason, they think not of the morrow. For the simple reason that they are in the present. That is the beauty of the trees, of the roses, of the lotuses, of the stars, of the earth, of the sky, of the animals. Look into the eyes of a cat or a dog. Look into the eyes of a small child. What depth and what innocence and what clarity. What is the secret of it all? A simple phenomenon. They live in the present. They are not yet corrupted by the past and the future. The mind has not yet appeared. The time has not yet appeared. You have been told and taught that time has three tenses, past, present, future. That is utterly wrong. Time has only two tenses, past and future. Present is part of eternity, not part of time. So when you are in the present, you are in the eternal. The question is wrong on every step. It is going to be so, because the question is from the mind. First, the questioner says, I have heard. That must have been enough for Bodhidharma to start laughing. Or he must have taken his staff in his hand to hit and beat this man. It happens many times that you enter the room of the Zen master And before you have even uttered a single word, he says, wrong, wrong. You have not uttered a single word, but the way you enter is enough to say, the body language, you are entering hesitant, doubtful, suspicious, or you are trying to prove yourself, trying to be very courageous, formulating a certain question or some experience, how to say it. And the master has seen it all and has heard it before you have even uttered a single word. One disciple of Rinzai one day told him that when I come with an answer, because you have given me a koan is a mystery. It represents existence. A koan is a riddle which is not soluble. A koan is something absurd. The sound of one hand clapping, that is a koan. What is the sound of one hand clapping? Now the disciple has been meditating on it. Every day he comes. He has to come to answer to the master what you have found. What is the outcome of your meditations? And he brings all kinds of answers. And whatsoever answer he brings, he is wrong. And he is beaten and thrown out. One day the disciple could not bear it anymore. It was too much because he has not said anything and the master started beating him. He said, but wait, I have not even said anything. The master said, there is no need to say it. I have heard it. I have seen it in your eyes. I have seen it in your walk. I recognize immediately when you have found the answer, you will not be needed to say it. I will know it. And yes, exactly it happened like that. When the disciple found the answer, there is no answer. That's what he found. One day he found that I am just being foolish. There is no answer. You can say it from the very beginning that this is foolish, but that won't do. You have to pass through all that fire of tackling an absurd question, knowing deep down that there is no answer to it and yet still searching for the answer. That's how you dig deep within yourself. One day when he reached to his core, there was no question, no answer, he started laughing. That day he didn't come to report. There was nothing to report. But that day the master appeared in his room and he said, now you have found. No need even to come to me. When you have found, I will come to you. Now the whole commune is affected by your finding. The master said your wife is pulsating so loudly all around that those who understand the language of vibes, they know that somebody has attained, that somebody has arrived home, that a traveler has reached. Bodhidharma must have, from the very beginning, started laughing. It is not reported, because it is a notebook of the disciples. many things are not reported in it, because the disciple cannot report them. He can't understand the inner reflections that happen into the mirror of the master. All that he can report is words that the master utters. Hence, nothing is said about Bodhidharma. The disciple goes on asking questions, and he goes on noting down the answers. The report seems to be a little dull. It has no touch of aliveness, because it is the disciple's notes. Hence, many things are missing. Many things that the master must have done are not being reported, because the disciple cannot understand them. For example, if Bodhidharma had started laughing, listening to the question, the disciple will not report it. It will look too much humiliating. He simply reports the words. Words that he feels fit with his answer. Although what Bodhidharma is saying is totally different from what he is asking. I have heard he asked that all Buddhas in the past, present and future preach the same dharma. Remember, for Buddhas there is no past, no present, no future. A Buddha is one who has become awakened. Time is a dream phenomenon. Have you ever observed how time changes as you change? If you are miserable, time becomes long, lengthy. If you are joyous, time becomes small. The clock will show the same time. If it is 1 hour, then the clock will show that 1 hour has passed. Whether you are miserable or blissful, the clock is not affected. The clock goes on moving. It is a mechanical device. It simply reports chronological time, chronological time. It does not report your inner experiences of time. If you are sitting with a friend after many years, time passes so fast. If you are lonely, miserable, anxious, restless, time seems to pass with such a slowness. This is your experience, that time becomes bigger or smaller according to you, according to your mind. Some moments you must have known when time had totally stopped. Ordinarily, the biological, the sleepy man knows only such moments through love making. Because it is only in love making that he loses his mind. It is only in love making that he gets lost. But that happens only for moments. The peak, the orgasmic peak, in which he loses all mind, becomes just a vibration, becomes just energy, liquid energy. No thought, no past, no future, no desire. It is only through love and the orgasmic experience that you become aware that there is a possibility of time stopping totally. Hence I say, sexual orgasm is the lowest but the fundamental experience of meditation. Lowest and fundamental. It is through sexual orgasm that man became aware of the infinite possibility of stopping time completely, of getting out of time. If you can get out of time for one moment, that means one can get out of time forever too. Then ways and means have to be found. That's how Tantra, Yoga, Zen, Tao, Sufism, all kinds of ways and means have been found. Once man became aware that the possibility exists, that there is a window from where you can escape, even though it happens only once in a while. Many times people ask me, why women have not become great masters like Buddha, Zarathustra, Lao Tzu, Bodhidharma, Jesus? Why? One of the fundamental reasons is that man has denied women the orgasmic experience. You will be surprised by my answer. You would not have imagined that that will be the root cause why women could not rise so high as a Buddha, as a Bodhidharma. What went wrong? One thing, man has not allowed women to have orgasmic experience. And it became possible because there is a little difference between man's orgasm and the woman's orgasm. Man comes to his orgasmic peak very quickly, so he can have his orgasm easily, quickly. The woman comes to the orgasmic plane slowly. Her pace is different. Unless a man loves the woman tremendously and helps her to come to the orgasmic state and moves slowly with her, is caring about her, is not using the woman only as a means to attain his own orgasm, but is also careful and attentive and loving enough that she should also have her orgasm, then he moves slowly. That's what Tantra has discovered centuries before, that man has to move very slowly. Man's orgasm is local, genital, and the woman's orgasm is more total. Her whole body becomes involved in it. Hence it takes time. Man's orgasm is so local, it does not take much time. Unless a man loves the woman, caresses her body, helps her whole body to rise to the peak, it is a subtle art to come to the orgasmic state together. When man and woman both come to the orgasmic state together, simultaneously, it is a great experience of ecstasy. Very rich. Man coming alone to orgasm is one thing. It misses much. It is not so rich. It is not multidimensional. It is more or less masturbatory. The woman has been used only as a means for masturbation. It is not true orgasm. And the woman remains behind. And for centuries, the man has been doing that. So many women have completely forgotten that there is any possibility of orgasm for them. It is only now, with the liberation movement, that women are becoming aware that they have been missing something very valuable in their life in the past ages. In the East, they are not yet aware of it. It is very rare to find in the East an orgasmic woman who knows what orgasm is. Even in the West, only a very small percent of women is becoming capable of orgasm. This has been the greatest operation, the greatest exploitation of women. Because if they are deprived of orgasm, they are deprived of one of the most fundamental experiences of meditation. The only window towards God remains closed. They never become aware that there is a moment when time disappears. There is a moment when I am no more a body, no more a mind, but a pure consciousness. Absolutely thoughtless, desireless, dreamless, and utterly blissful. This is the lowest experience, remember. One has not to stop there. This is the first step of a long journey. Only then you reach to the temple. But it is a necessary step. It is very fundamental. So once in a while, you may have become aware that time stops. But time stops only when you are blissful. Time stops only when you are absolutely without mind. Conscious, yet mind is not there. Because you are not minding. You are not thinking. A simple existence. It can happen in music. It can happen watching a sunset. It can happen while you are painting. But those are far more rare experiences. Because sex is available to each and everybody. It is a biological gift of nature. To be a musician of such a caliber that you can lose yourself as you lose in a woman or a man is a rare phenomenon. Only once in a while. Or to be a painter, a sculptor, a dancer, a poet. These need great talents. One may not have them. But the same thing happens. That's why it is possible for a great painter to go beyond sex very easily. Because he has another window to experience the orgasm, to experience the timeless moment, to experience God. It is easy for a poet, a dancer, to go beyond sex. then it is for others. Because they have an alternative from where they can experience the same thing and maybe with a greater depth. But whatsoever the cause, if you have ever experienced a moment when time stops, that is the moment which has to be understood, because that is the nature of meditation. That's what brings you home finally, ultimately. Before that, all kinds of questions will arise. They are all meaningless. Masters answer them because of compassion. Otherwise, they are all foolish. Mind is stupid. Mind as such is stupid. It asks very stupid questions. The questioner is asking that I have heard that all the Buddhas in the past, present and future preached the same dharma. Now a Buddha does not preach. Yes, much happens through him, but he is not a preacher. He is not a sermonizer. He is not a priest. He is not even a prophet. Somebody asked Krishnamurti, why you talk? Krishnamurti says, why the rose blooms? Ask the rose. And the same is my answer, he said. For a Buddha, it is not a question of preaching. It is simply his overflowing compassion. These words don't apply to the Buddhas. No ordinary word is applicable to the Buddha. Or you have to change its meaning so totally that it is no more the same word. The questioner says they have preached the same dharma. And countless beings were saved from suffering. Now suffering is a dream. You suffer because you are asleep. It is a nightmare. It is not a reality. So there is no question of saving you. You are already saved. Remember, a Buddha is not a savior. A Buddha is only an awakener. Nobody needs to be saved. You are already saved. You may be seeing a nightmare. And you may be suffering in your nightmare. But it is all dream. It is not true. It is not real. And whenever you will awake, you will laugh at the whole absurdity of it. But we understand things according to ourselves. Hence these questions. Our minds are so much conditioned that we go on asking questions which are not relevant at all. And there are people who will answer our questions. And we may be consoled. And we may start clinging to ideas and philosophies. the real master is not going to give you an answer as a consolation, because that will be strengthening your old mind. The real master will hammer, shatter your head completely. He will cut your head. He will make you aware that this mind can accumulate many answers, but they are all useless, meaningless. Because this mind itself is wrong. The American diplomatic courier had just arrived in the tiny Latin American capital, and as he strode briskly out of the airport terminal, he was obviously charged with a sense of his own self-importance, snapping instructions at the porters, carrying his luggage and looking about impatiently for the car that was supposed to be there to meet him. He certainly had no time for the dirty little street urchins who trailed after him, trying to sell everything from his shoe sign to their sisters. "Hey, Americano," called out one lad, especially worldly wise for his years, "I get what you like if you pay. Feel the pictures, marijuana, girls, boys. I can't be bothered with this vermin," the undiplomatic messenger disdainfully proclaimed, brushing aside ragged pursuer aside. Brushing his ragged pursuer aside. "My business here is with the American ambassador." "Can do, senor," responded the boy. "But for an ambassador, you will have to pay extra." People have their own conditioning, their own thinking, their own ways of looking at things. They hear from a preoccupied mind. They question from a preoccupied mind. And any answer given to them reaches never undistorted. The questioner asks, "Is it not true?" Bodhidharma says, "You have heard someone speak of dreams, and you yourself are actually dreaming. Whatever you figure with, your dualistic mind never makes a true account of mind essence. Therefore, I call you a dreamer. Dream is one thing and realization another. Do not mix them together. Wisdom in the dream is not the real wisdom. One who has true wisdom does not hold self-recognition. Buddhas in the past, present and future are in the realm beyond cognition. If you shut off your thinking faculty, blocking off the road of your mind, you will enter a different sphere. Until that time, whatever you think, whatever you say, whatever you do, is nothing but foolishness in dreamland." To cut down on expenses, two secretaries decided to vacation together and to share a hotel room. On the first night, one turned to her friend and rested her hand on her shoulder. "There is something about myself I have never told you," she admitted. "I will be frank." "No," said the other girl, "I will be frank." I would like to buy somebody makeup for my girlfriend. The young musician told the clerk at the cosmetics counter. Certainly, sir, said the clerk. What color would you like? Never mind the color, said the musician. What flavors do you have? This is the stage of everybody. We are living in our own dreams. What Bodhidharma calls dreamland, you can call Disneyland or California land. Now the whole world is slowly is turning into a Disneyland. In fact, it has always been so. People live in their dreams. The so-called ordinary people live in their dreams, and the so-called VVIPs, they live in the same kind of dream world. The Pope was reading in his Vatican sanctuary when suddenly he was called to the telephone. This is a Father Novelli in Newark, said the voice. Your Holiness, I think that Jesus Christ is walking down the middle of Fifth Avenue. What should I do? Look up busy, replied the pontiff. Look up busy, what else you can do? These people, whether small or so-called big ones, are in the same world. I have heard Michelangelo was painting the ceiling of a church. He was alone on top of a big stool. One woman came in and started praying loudly, talking to God. Michelangelo heard her saying things to God. He enjoyed the way she was talking to God, as if God was really there. He played a trick on her. He said, listen, I am Jesus Christ. The woman said, you shut up. I am talking to your father. Just look around. Just watch people. You need not go to the movies. You need not read detective novels. Just sit by the side of the road and watch people's faces. How they are moving, how they are walking, their gestures. Few are talking to themselves. Their lips are moving. Everybody seems to be in a dream, in his own world. That's why there is so much class, because each one has his own world view and his own world. And whenever two persons come close, sooner or later the class happens. The class is bound to happen, because their dreams cannot coincide. And everybody wants to impose his dreams on the other. Now, nobody can dream your dreams. That is impossible. Dreams cannot be imposed on others. You cannot share your dreams with others. You cannot invite your wife, your husband in your dream. That is impossible. Dreaming is such a private phenomenon. Hence, people who live in dreams live in a private world. They never become aware of the real world that surrounds us. They see, but through a thick mist. They see and yet they see not. You have heard someone speak of dreams, says Bodhidharma, and you yourself are actually dreaming. Whatever you figure with your dualistic mind never makes a true account of mind essence. Therefore, I call you a dreamer. Unless thinking disappears totally, you remain a dreamer. Thinking is dualistic. Thinking is logical. Thinking is Aristotelian. Unless thinking is dropped totally, your mind will go on playing tricks upon you. It will go on deceiving you. And you will never be able to know the real essence of your being, which is freedom, which is bliss, which is God. Dream is one thing and realization another. Realization is possible only when dreaming evaporates. Do not mix them together. What you have heard is meaningless. What you have known on your own has only meaning. Wisdom in the dream is not the real wisdom. You can be a very wise dreamer, but a dreamer is a dreamer. You can be very knowledgeable in your dreams. You can dream of beautiful things, sweet dreams, of golden palaces, of paradise, but they are all dreams. Whether you dream of heaven or hell, it is the same. Hell is a dream. Heaven is a dream. In Western languages, these are the only two possibilities after death, heaven or hell. Hence, Western religions have never been able to free of dreaming. They don't talk of being free of dreaming. They don't talk of absolute desirelessness. They have not risen to the ultimate purity of religiousness. The Eastern religions talk of a third state, moksha, nirvana, freedom. Freedom from heaven and hell both. Because Buddhas in the East have been saying that your fetters may be made of gold or of iron, but fetters are fetters. You are chained. You are a prisoner. You can be free only when you are free of all fetters, made of iron, made of gold. All fetters, all chains have to be dropped. Then a third phenomenon becomes possible, moksha, nirvana. There is no word to translate it. It simply means getting free of hell and heaven both. Because both are dreams. One who has true wisdom does not hold self-recognition. This is one of the fundamentals of Buddha's teaching. One who has true wisdom does not hold self-recognition. One who knows, one who has come to terms with his true essence, knows no ego, no I. No self is recognized. He is part of the universal flow. He is no more separate. His private world disappears. He is no more an idiot. The word idiot means one who lives in his own private world. It comes from the root idiocy. From the same root comes idiosyncrasy. An idiot is one who never takes note of the real world and goes on living in his private world and thinks that is the real world. In that sense, unless you become a Buddha, you are an idiot. Buddhas in the past, present and future are in the realm beyond cognition. You cannot see them. Buddhas cannot be seen. Ordinary eyes are not capable of seeing them. Neither ordinary minds are capable of understanding them. If you want really to understand a Buddha, you will have to become a Buddha. There is no other way. You will have to taste awakening. By becoming a Buddha, you would have understood all the Buddhas of the past, present and future. If you shut off your thinking faculty, blocking off the road of your mind, you will enter a different sphere. The only thing to be done is shut off the constant, feverish activity of the mind. Put it off. Put it aside. And then you enter into a different space, a different sphere. Until that time, whatever you think, whatever you say, whatever you do is nothing but foolishness in dreamland. Thurman Pickens and Diggs were discussing the world's greatest inventions. "I believe," said Thurman, "that electricity is the best invention. It turns on the lights, makes the TV work, it do everything." "Eh," agreed Pickens, "but I believe that atomic power is the most important invention. It can do everything. Electricity can, and you can push a button and blow up the world." "Well, Ganaman," said Diggs, "to me the greatest invention is the thermos. It keeps the hot food hot and the cold food cold." "What's so great about that?" asked Thurman. "How do it know?" replied Diggs. Your mind, whatsoever it thinks, small things about the thermos, or great things, great metaphysical things about God, because it is the same mind, it makes no difference. The object of thinking can be thermos or God, Coca-Cola or paradise. But the mind that thinks about it is the same. Bodhidharma is saying, don't go on changing the subject of your thinking. Don't go on changing the matter, subject matter of your thinking. Change your very inner space. Let us have a totally different mind, which thinks not, desires not, dreams not. Then you enter into the world of the Buddhas. The second question, what kind of wisdom should one use to cut off delusions? Each question, again and again, shows one thing very clearly, that the answer has not been heard. As if the questioner is more interested in his questions than in the answers. Just out of politeness, he listens to the answer, but he is preparing his question. Otherwise, a single answer is enough. All the questions are solved. Again he asks the same thing from a different angle. What kind of wisdom should one use to cut off delusions? As if you can use wisdom. As if wisdom is a tool to be used, a means. As if after you have become wise, you will have to cut your delusions. It is like a man who says, when I have become awakened, how I will get rid of my dreams? What kind of awakening has to be used to cut all the dreams? It is like a man who in the night sees a rope on the road and projects a snake on the rope, escapes, runs away, freaks out, and somebody says, don't be worried, I know it is a rope, come with me, I will show you that it is a rope, let us take a lamp with us. He says, okay, even if with a lamp I come to know that it is a rope, then tell me how to get rid of the snake. Exactly like that is this question. What kind of wisdom should one use to cut off delusions? When you are wise, delusions are not there. In fact, delusions have to go first, then only you become wise. But our so-called wise are living in deep illusions. That's why the question seems to be relevant. Stephanie woke up with a sore shoulder one morning and went to see her doctor about it. After examining it, the doctor said he could not find anything wrong with it. She insisted it hurt her. So the doctor said, well, tell me what you did last night. She told him that she had gone riding in the country with her boyfriend and that they took a walk in a cemetery and read some of the tombstone inscriptions. The doctor said, possibly you caught a cold in your muscle from the chilly air. Will you get undressed so I can give you a more thorough examination? She did so, and the doctor examined her entire back. After a minute or so, he said, Stephanie, I can't find a thing wrong with your shoulder. but your buttocks state that you have been dead since 1892. Our so-called wise people, they are in the same boat. They are not a bit different from you. The people you go for advice themselves are in the dark. The pandits, the priests, the scholars. Of course, they are more informed than you. But it is not a question of information. Wisdom comes through transformation, not through information. Bodhidharma says, when you observe your delusions, you will know that they are baseless and not dependable. In this way, you can cut confusion and doubt. This is what I call wisdom. When you observe your delusions as delusions, you are finished with them. The moment you know that something is a dream, you are free of it. Nothing else is needed to be done. That's why I insist for my sannyasins, there is no need to go anywhere else. Live in the world, but become aware. Just becoming aware is being a sannyasin. No need to renounce, no need to escape anywhere. Become aware and you will see what is illusion, what is dream, and whatsoever is known as illusion disappears. Nothing else is needed to be done. A frank female rebel named Glutz disdained any ifs, ands or buts. When they asked what she would need to be totally freed of her hang-up, her answer was nuts. Everybody is in need of nuts, because everybody is nuts. Mad people are in need of other mad people. Because only mad people can support your illusions. You support their illusions, they support your illusions. That is what is called friendship, love in the ordinary world, companionship. A friend in need is a friend indeed. And when is the need? When your illusions start disappearing, he helps you to hold, to cling hard to them. He does not allow you to let go of your illusions. Whatsoever happens, he helps you to remain the same as you have always been. He does not allow you to change. Life is every moment trying to change you. But you have so many friends, protectors, family, parents, teachers. The whole management of the government, the church is such that it helps you to remain as you are. It is a great conspiracy to keep people dreaming. Because nobody wants you to be awake. It is dangerous. Because people who have ever become awakened have always proved dangerous to the status quo, to the established church, state, society, to the establishment as such. The awakened people have always proved a kind of nuisance, because they start helping other people to become awake. When you observe your delusions, you will know that they are baseless and not dependable. In this way, you can cut confusion and doubt. Nothing else is needed. Just becoming aware of them, that they are illusions, you are finished. The moment you know that 2 plus 2 is not 5, 2 plus 2 is 4, you are finished with 2 plus 2 is equal to 5. You need not do anything else. It is enough to understand. The way of the Buddha is that of understanding. The third question, what sort of delusions will be cleared by Zen? Again and again. There are only two things which are infinite in the world. The stupidity of the disciples and the compassion of the masters. Now he asks, what sort of delusions? As if there are many kinds of illusions. Illusion is illusion. It has only one quality, that it is not true, that it is not so, that it is not part of reality, that it is your projection. Now, what you project does not matter. You can project a bullock cart, that is an illusion. You can project a golden chariot, that is an illusion. You can project anything. But the basic nature of illusion is the same. There are not many kinds of illusion. But the logical mind is always after how many kinds, what categories, and what sort of delusions will be cleared by Zen. As if few will be cleared by Zen and few will still remain. What kind of dreams will disappear when you become awake? As if few kinds of dreams will still continue, will still persist. But the compassion of Master is such that Bodhidharma says, any delusions of mediocrity, of a philosopher, of a Shravaka, of a Pratyeka Buddha, or of a Bodhisattva. He says, any idea that I am this or that will disappear. The basic illusion is the illusion of I, the ego. And the ego will disappear. Some people think they are inferior. But the ego persists. I am inferior. And somebody thinks he is superior. The same ego persists. I am superior. Somebody thinks I am mediocre. Somebody thinks I am very, very wise. Somebody thinks I am just a follower of Buddha, a Shravaka. And somebody thinks I am a Buddha himself. All kinds of illusions that are rooted in the idea of the ego will disappear. When you wake up, ego disappears, and with it all its paraphernalia. The whole lot that is created by the ego goes with it. Those are all shadows of the ego. The fourth question, what is the difference between a sage's most excellent life and the common people's everyday life? Bodhidharma says, it is like Gosamar, Some mistake it for vapor, but it is in fact a spider's silk that floats in the air. A mediocre person sees the sage's life and believes it to be the same as his own everyday life. Whereas, the enlightened man sees the holy path in a life of mediocrity. You will observe in the sutras that all Buddhas preach for two groups, the mediocre and the wise. But in the eye of Zen, a sage's life is one of mediocrity, and the mediocre persons as the sages. This one life has no form and is empty by nature. If you become attached to any form, you should reject it. If you see an ego, a soul, a birth or a death, reject them all. A very significant answer it is. Meditate over it. It is like Gossamer. Our life is just our own ego playing all kinds of games with us. The ego is not a reality, but only a belief. It is just like your name. When you were born without a name. Everybody is born without a name. Then a name is given. A name is a necessity. It has certain utility in the world. It will be very difficult if all people were without names. So it is a utilitarian necessity. But it is not reality, remember. You are not your name, but slowly, slowly you become your name. If somebody says something against your name, you are infuriated. You are ready to fight. You are enraged. As if you are your name. Swami Rama one day came laughing. He was in New York. The host could not find out the reason why he is so much laughing. What has happened? He had gone for a walk and he comes with such laughter. The laughter looked almost mad, eccentric. The host asked, "What is the matter? What has happened?" And Rama said, "Few people started abusing Rama, insulting Rama. And I enjoyed the whole thing so much. I watched it. I saw Rama being insulted. But I am not Rama." Those people were unnecessarily wasting their breath. I am not my name. That's why I am laughing. And it is good that I don't have any name. Nobody can insult me. Nobody can abuse me. I am nameless. I am formless. But we are in an unconscious state and we become identified with anything. It was at the office Christmas party, as they lay on the office reception couch in the darkened room, their breath came hot and fast. "Ah, Harbi," she said passionately, "you have never made love to me like this before. Is it because of the holiday spirit?" "No," he panted. "It is probably because I am not Harbi." unconscious people. Who knows who is Herbie and who is not Herbie? Even Herbie himself is not Herbie. But we go on living our life with all this unconsciousness. Kenter, Klein, Levy and Strahlowitz met for lunch. After ordering, Kenter said, I. A, answered Klein. Yai, added Levy. Look, said Strahlowitz, if you fellas are gonna talk business, I ain't gonna stay. We have certain ideas in the mind. We project those ideas on others. We interpret them according to our ideas. And we live in an encaged world of our own creation. This is what Bodhidharma calls the mind, the ego. Drop it. See that which is. Don't interfere with it. Don't interpret it in any way. See the rose flower. Don't even say it is beautiful. Because that is interference. Don't say anything at all. The rose is silent, you be also silent. Let there be a meeting, deep meeting, between you and the rose. No mind in between you and the rose. And you will be surprised that the observer becomes the observed. There comes a moment when you are the rose and the rose is you. And that is the moment when you know. Never before it. That is the moment when wisdom arises in you. And once you have the knack of finding wisdom, you can find it each moment of your life. Slowly, slowly, it becomes your natural climate. It is like gossamer. Some mistake it for vapor, but it is not. In fact, it is a spider's silk that floats in the air. A mediocre person sees the sage life and believes it to be the same as his own everyday life. If the mediocre person, the ordinary person, goes to see a Buddha, he will not see any difference. Many have asked Buddha that you sleep just like we sleep, you eat just like we eat. You become tired just as we become tired. So what is the difference? The ordinary person projects his ordinariness even on the Buddha. That's why later on, when the followers see that ordinary people will not be able to understand the Buddha, if we really write down their actual life, they start creating fictions around their masters. Hence, whatsoever you now have about Buddha, Jesus, Muhammad, Krishna, Mahavira, are all fictions. They are not true. Jesus walking on water is a fiction. Invented by the followers, so that ordinary people can see that the master is extraordinary. He is no ordinary man. Jesus reviving the dead or curing the blind. These are fictions. If they are metaphors, then they are beautiful. That is the function of every Buddha, to give eyes to the blind in a metaphorical sense. To revive the dead, because you are all dead. The way you are in your graves. And each Buddha calls the Lazarus out of the grave. If it is a metaphor, if it is a poetic, symbolic way of saying a thing, beautiful. But if you try to prove that it is something historical, factual, then you are simply trying to befool the ordinary people. But this is not going to help. The ordinary people cannot be helped in this way. This only creates a problem for the ordinary people. Because whenever they will come across a real Buddha, they will expect him to walk on water. And if he cannot walk on the water, and no Buddha is foolish enough to walk on water. Then they will think he is not a Buddha. Your expectations are created by the followers. They were created in order to help you to understand their master. In fact, they have done just the opposite. You will never be able to understand any living master. And dead masters are of no use. Only a living master, the touch of a living master can change you from the base metal into gold. But great difficulties have been created around Buddha, so many stories. Around Zarathustra, so many stories. And all those stories are fictions created by the followers. And as time passes by, more and more fictions are being added every day. To sort it out, what is true and what is untrue. But the reason is what Bodhidharma is saying. The ordinary person believes that the Buddha is also ordinary, just like us. Whereas the enlightened man sees the holy path in a life of mediocrity. And just the opposite is the case with the Buddha. Buddha is reported to have said that the moment I became enlightened, the whole existence became enlightened for me. And I can watch for it. The moment I became enlightened, the whole existence became enlightened for me too. When I see you, I don't see you as mediocre, ordinary. I see you as Buddhas. Asleep, of course. Snoring too. But that does not make any difference in your Buddhahood. A Buddhahood has every freedom to snore and sleep. But I can see deep down your snoring is only superficial. Your sleep is only superficial. Deep down there is a light burning eternally. I see you as Buddhas. You have not yet seen it. The function of the master is to help to see. What he is already seeing in you, he helps you also to see it. That's the whole function of a master. You will observe in the sutras that all Buddhas preach for two groups, the mediocre and the wise. But in the eye of Zen, a sage's life is one of mediocrity, and the mediocre persons as the sage. Although Buddhas have to teach two kinds of people, because there are two kinds of people, superficially, the mediocre and the wise. Hence, there are two kinds of statements in all the statements of all the Buddhas. Few statements are made to foolish people. Don't judge the Buddha by those statements. Remember the context. Remember to whom they were given. Who was answered? Don't forget the person. And few answers are for the wise one. It is very difficult to sort it out, because they are all compiled together. In the Vedas, there is only 1% statements which are worth keeping. 99% is just worth throwing away. So is the case with the Old Testament. So is the case with Quran. Because Muhammad comes across all kinds of people, and these are the basic categories. The stupid, the mediocre, the dreamers, the sleepy, and the wise ones. To the wise ones, he will say one thing. For example, Jesus says, "Knock and the door shall be opened unto you." This must have been told to somebody very, very asleep. Rabia was passing one day, and she saw Hassan sitting before a mosque, tears rolling down from his cheeks, and he was crying with raised hands in deep prayer. He was saying to God, "I am knocking and knocking on your doors. For years I have been knocking. Why don't you open the doors? When you will receive me in?" Rabia was passing. She came close to Hassan, shook him from his prayer and said, "You stupid. The doors are open. They have never been closed. Simply get up and enter." Now Hassan is just on the border. One step and he will become wise. There is no contradiction in Jesus saying, "Knock and the door shall be opened," and Rabia saying that, "What nonsense you are talking, that I am knocking. The doors are already open." There is no contradiction, remember. There can't be. It is impossible to find contradiction between two Buddha's statements. But the context is different. Jesus must have been talking to ordinary mediocre people, and Rabia is talking to one who is just on the verge of becoming enlightened. That very moment, Hassan opened his eyes and said, "Right, you are right. The doors have never been closed. I have been a fool." It is so compassionate of you that you disturbed my sleep. I am immensely grateful to you. Yes, the doors are never closed. And I would have prayed my whole life, believing that the doors are closed and I have to knock and I have to pray. Since that day, nobody ever saw Hassan praying. He stopped coming to the mosque. What is the point? The doors are everywhere. Wherever you are, God is there, confronting you, challenging you. Buddhas have to speak in two ways. But Bodhidharma says, I am not interested in the mediocre. He says, but in the eye of Zen, a sage's life is one of mediocrity and the mediocre persons as the sages. We don't see any difference. To us, the sage lives just like the ordinary person, and we see in the ordinary person a Buddha. We see in the ordinary the profound, and in the profound the ordinary. Hence, Zen monks have lived a very ordinary life, with no holier-than-thou nonsense. This one life has no form and is empty by nature. If you become attached to any form, you should reject it. If you see an ego, a soul, a birth or a death, reject them all. Bodhidharma says, reject the very idea that I am a Buddha. Reject the very idea that I am special, extraordinary, spiritual, holy, because these are all tricks of the ego. The ego is coming from the back door again. Reject all identifications. Simply be a total emptiness. And then whatsoever you will say, and whatsoever you will do, and whatsoever you will be, is going to be right. It is going to be beautiful. Is going to be graceful. And the last question, why and how do we reject them? The stupidity continues. Why and how do we reject them? Bodhidharma says, if you have Zen, you should not see a thing. There will be no question of rejecting. It is only a way of saying that reject the ego. If you meditate, if you become silent, there is no ego to reject. You won't see a thing. Neither life nor death. Neither matter nor mind. All things will disappear. You will be an empty space. A mirror reflecting nothing. So don't be worried. First enter into meditation. Have the meditative quality in you. Become silent and thoughtless, contentless, still. And then there is no need to worry how and why to reject. There is nothing to reject. You will not see a thing. The most firmly established in the path appears the most remiss. One of the greatest statements ever made. Bodhidharma says, the most firmly established in the path appears the most remiss. That's why one who is really a Buddha will always be condemned by the ordinary people because he appears to be most remiss. Because he fits in no category. He fits in no morality. You cannot predict anything about him. He is unpredictable. Why? Because he is so established in his being that he cares nothing about anything. He lives spontaneously, whatsoever the consequence. He will look to you careless. Because he is so conscious, he need not care. he will look to you negligent. He is not. He is so conscious. There is no question of negligence. He will look to you lazy, but he is not. There is no question. He is so conscious, laziness cannot exist in his consciousness. But to the outside world, he will not fit into any category. The Christian church will not call him a saint. The Hindus will not call him a Mahatma. The Jainas will not call him a Muni. Even if Buddha comes today back, Buddhists will not recognize him as a Buddha. He will look very remiss, very astray. It is said that when a Zen master became enlightened, he came from the caves in the mountains to the marketplace with a bottle of wine. People looked at him. They could not believe their eyes. They had always thought him that he is a very holy man. Now coming back to the marketplace with a bottle of wine, has he gone mad? But he is simply saying that I have gone beyond all rules, regulations. I have gone beyond all morals, all rituals. Now, you will not be able anymore to predict about me. I am no more ordinary and no more holy. I am simply whatsoever I am. He has come to the marketplace to destroy your idea of his holiness. Sufis, Taoists and Zen masters are very well known to destroy your idea of their holiness, their speciality. They manage to devise many methods to simply destroy your expectations, to undermine you. They never fulfill your expectations. That is the true sign of a master, that he never fulfills your expectations. If somebody fulfills your expectations, be sure and certain that he is a phony. Remember this beautiful statement. The most firmly established in the path appears the most remiss. Enough for today.